Music's been a blessing this morning, hasn't it? It just prepares our heart to meet with God through the preaching of His Word today. We'll dismiss the boys and girls through sixth grade this morning back to the Children's Church room, and you have some great things in store for you back there. So boys and girls through sixth grade. We have enjoyed the ministry of Dr. Les Olola these past couple of days. Dr. O was the longtime president of Northland, and is now the chancellor and has been working with young people and families, I think, for eternity past. And it's been a long time. He's been influencing my life specifically for the last 23 years. And I am so appreciative of his ministry. God has transformed his heart. He has an amazing testimony of salvation. Ask him about it, and it'll be a blessing to you. But it's a joy for me to be able to introduce him and to have him in our pulpit this morning, opening God's Word and sharing what God has laid on his heart. So, Dr. Rowe, why don't you come? It's a joy to have you here today.
Well, let me again say thank you for the privilege to be here. It has been a great time with the youth conference and to be able to have the reps from Bob Jones and Maranatha, and again the excellent quartet music we heard, and then to have the privilege of being with our road team, which was an extra blessing for me, and I'm so thankful. Also, it's good to look out and see so many of you have connected with us at family camp. That's always a great, refreshing time, and we certainly want to say thank you for that privilege. I'd like us to turn to Numbers chapter 20 this morning. I want to preach on a sin that is rarely seen by people in church. It's rarely detected in your heart by those who are casually acquainted with you. But yet it's a sin that can cause tremendous devastation. And that sin is the sin of anger. You say that anger is kind of an unusual topic for a Sunday morning service. But what I have detected over the years is Charlene and I have done conferences with husbands and wives, and as we have preached in recent, especially in the last 10 years, where we have seen the churches where we have been, I have touched on this topic of anger. And what is being discovered is the anger that is there is not seen, because most of that anger is being directed against God. And it is not seen in the heart. You can come in church, you can sit there, you can sing, and as you look at your, we learn, we worship, and we live. And as you hear as a body, learning and worshiping is a time that is an external function together, but then you have to leave here and go out and live that life. And many are sitting within a body like this, questioning the goodness of God. If God is so good, then why this? If God is so good, then why has He not answered prayer? God obviously has favorites, and I'm not one of them. But yet no one would detect that seeing you in church. But yet you wrestle with that within your soul. If God is God, why doesn't He stop the mess that's going on in the United States right now? Why doesn't He shut the mouths of those who are railing against Him? And yet we find from the message that I will preach this morning, the exhortation that we are to learn from the things that were written before for our learning and admonition. We learn from this. James chapter 1 says that the wrath of man does not work the righteousness of God. And I'm going to take the life of a godly man. A man who for 40 years was being prepared to be the next Pharaoh. And then from a fit of anger, he is driven into the desert for 40 years. So going from somebody to learning he was a nobody. And then at the end of that 40-year period, 80 years old, God takes Moses to lead the children from Egypt to Israel. Egypt to the promised land. And at 80 years old, God takes Moses on a very difficult assignment. And I want to see in chapter 20 of the book of Numbers, and I want to unfold here a little bit of this topic of anger. Numbers chapter 20, and we will look in verse 1. There are studies in from Duke Medical School. Dr. William Redford of Duke Medical School says, anger produces a high-stress hormone that burns out our body. Actually, it says greater, more destructive than smoking, than drinking and overeating. Abiding anger within the soul. It gnaws and eats at that person. Chapter 20 and verse 1. Then came the children of Israel, even the whole congregation, into the desert of Zin in the first month. And the people abode in Kadesh, and Miriam died there and was buried there. First of all, I want to look at the cause of anger as we unfold this text. Number one cause is personal pain. As we look at the context of Moses, now at this stage, as he is approaching the last 40 years of his life, he is getting ready to take the people into the promised land, and Miriam died. There was personal pain. Now, who was Miriam in the life of Moses? The older sister. Now, the older sister was there. What role did she play at the time when Moses was born? She was the tool that God used for his protection, the preservation, to be put into the basket there in the river. And the life was preserved that he might literally become one of Pharaoh's sons, being in line to become the next Pharaoh. And Miriam went through, she criticized who he was dating, typical older sister. And you found how that worked out and stopped the movement of God for a period of time. But loss, personal pain. I don't think there's a person within this building that sometime in life is not going to experience personal pain. And oftentimes that pain is not something you can express openly. It's something that you carry in your soul. You share with the Lord because you don't want to be misunderstood. We were preaching in a meeting, and a lady who was the pianist, she and her husband were faithful. We had been in that church a few times, very faithful members within that body. I was not finished preaching, and she came out of her seat on the right, came on her knees at the altar, was weeping as I was finishing the message. And I went to her afterwards. I said, I'm not sure what's going on within your soul, but God cares. I will tell you that. And that next, on Monday night, she came with a 3-page handwritten note to me and unfolded the anger that was in her soul against God. No one would ever guess. She said, my anger against God, because they had prayed and prayed and prayed that God would allow them to have children. And because they were not able to have children, she said, I would sit in church and look at families and look at happy families and look at children and wonder, what does God have against me? And she and her husband were probably the most faithful people in that church. They played the piano, the organ, all the choir music and everything else. And she said, I got that settled with God. She said that anger was manifested at work. She was a writer for one of the big newspapers. She said, my anger was manifested with my husband. I would just get angry when he would let his socks, lay on the floor, and when he would not pick up his things, and she said, I just growled. And she said, I began to realize after your message last night that my anger was really at God. And I realized that the pain I was experiencing was blaming God. And boy, what a victory. I mean, it was like her countenance was totally changed. Doing a men's conference up in Wyoming, and we had the snowmobile up to the camp. And there were over 100 men that got there. We parked in the road, and then we had to get in the snow machines and go up to camp. And the camp director told me there was a man here that was brought by the owner of a construction company. He was not a saved man. But this man paid him the 2 days for work and also paid his way to come. But he said he was not a Christian. And as I got up to preach that opening night, I could detect Bill. He sat right up against the wall in that chapel. And he kept his head down. You could see that he appeared like he was not paying attention. And then the next day on Saturday, I was preaching. And then the man who owned the construction company came to me. He said, have you gotten a chance to talk to Bill yet? I noticed he was writing a lot during your last message. And he wants to talk to you. And so I sought Bill out before my last session. And I went to Bill to his chair in the back of the chapel there. And I said, Bill, I'm humbled that you would be here and I get a chance to preach to you. And I understand that you wanted to talk with me. He said, yes, I do, but I don't want to. I don't agree with your whole premise. And I just didn't want to get in your face about it. He said, when you got up and preached Friday night, you said that we were sinners. He said, no, God is a sinner. And he said, put this in your anger file. And he shoved this note in my face. And he said, Dr. Les, for your anger file, what do you say to a man who watched his mother suffer from a 40-foot fall? I was 5 years old. Watched his father die from a brain tumor. I was 7 years old. Watched his sister become a heroin addict. I was 10 years old. Saw his puppy get hit by a car. I was 13 years old. Who prayed that I would never see my grandmother suffer. I walked in when the paramedics were doing CPR. She died. And there is much more who prayed that his mom would not suffer and take her years before he did not suffer. And I watched her die. Whose nephew died at 30 years old. And there is more. Thanks for your time. He said, no, I'm not the sinner. God is the sinner. He caused all this. I said, oh, Bill, I said, I am not upset at all with your words. I said, Bill, if you only understood the God you're angry at is the only one who can heal the suffering of your heart, is the only one who sent his only begotten son that he might pour out his wrath on him, that you, Bill, might know what real peace for eternity is. I said, Bill, I can see the hurt, but don't reject the only one who can heal that hurt. And so then I had to go and preach, and the camp director said, as soon as you're done preaching, we need to get your stuff out of your cabin because we've got to head back down to the road, and we're bringing a snowmobile with a sled behind. And I was hustling out to go to my cabin in the deep snow, and right behind me came Bill, and I turned, and he bear hugged me, lifted me right off the ground. And he said, I said, Bill, I love you. And I said, you know the people who came here love you or they would not have to. He said, I know that. But he again said, thanks. He didn't get saved. But he gave me his email address and I've been emailing. You know, this poor guy is wrestling from personal pain and wondering if a God of love is so loving, why would he allow this? It is not God who caused this. But God does have the answer to that. I don't know what your personal pain is, but I'll guarantee you every person sometime in life is going to have to decide, is God good? Then you have to conclude God is always good. Here, Moses' sister died. Then verse 2, and there was no water for the congregation, and they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron. And here's point 2, and the people chode with Moses. So there was people pressure. Have you ever experienced people pressure? I don't care what you do sometimes. I don't care how loving you are. I don't care how you serve and how you sacrifice. There are some people that would give an aspirin a headache. They'd make coffee nervous. And it seemed like they are in your life. And you have to begin to realize, you know what? I have to start following the advice I've always given Charlene. Don't let other people's problems become our problems. Because a lot of people are in an emotional mess and they want to put their emotional payments on our charge card. And they want us to make the payments for their emotion. But there was people pressure, and the people chode with Moses and spake, saying, would God we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. Why have you brought this congregation of the Lord into this wilderness that we and our cattle should die there? And why have you made us to come up out of Egypt to bring us into this evil place? There is no place of seed or figs or vines or pomegranates. Neither is there any water to drink. Here was Moses. Could have been a Pharaoh. Surrendered to God to do this task. I mean, this organization this weekend to get 250 young people and sponsors in here took a year or two of planning, contacts being made, transportation, food things being made. That's 250 people. Moses was taking a group of people from a place they wanted to stay to a place they didn't want to go. How many? 600,000 fighting men, which meant there were probably at least 600,000 fighting women and maybe 3 million screaming kids. You talk about a headache. And they're screaming. This word chode didn't mean they were saying, Moses, could I speak to you privately? They were screaming at him. You are the ones who took us into this place. And pardon my play on words, they gave Moses such a headache, God had to give him 2 tablets. And I tell leaders, I said one thing about leadership. For every headache we face in leadership, God has given us the tablet. His word, hallelujah for that. Otherwise, we would have no hope and have no cause. People pressure. And right now, you can think of some person in your life who is that pain and who is that pressure point. Well, let's look not only the cause of anger, let's look at the countenance of anger. How does it show? How does anger show? Well, number one, sarcastic words. Now look in verse 7, and the Lord spake to Moses, saying, take the rod and gather the assembly, you and Aaron, your brother, speak unto the rock before their eyes, and it shall give forth water, and thou shalt bring forth to them water out of the rock. So shalt thou give the congregation and their beasts drink. And Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he commanded them, and Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation before the rock, and he said unto them, hear now, ye rebels. Is that what God told him to do? No, God said, go and speak to the rock. He takes the rod, gets before them, and he takes cutting words. And I don't fault Moses at all. If it had been me, I would have never gotten as far as Moses had gotten with those people. But what did he do? Cutting words. God didn't say, go and tell them, you rebels. God said, go talk to the rock. How easy is it for us, especially as parents sometimes, or as husbands, and I appreciate it. I was between two sons. I was in the hallway hearing the teen Sunday school and the pastor's class on the biblical basis of manhood and womanhood, and how easy it for us as husbands to say cutting words. Come home from work, house is topsy-turvy, wife has been at home with five kids, one has been sick all day with all of the trimmings that go along with that. And he comes in expecting a meal on the table, expecting the house to be orderly. And in love, he says, honey, do you have trouble organizing your time? That is not. She said, I'll tell you what. You stay here tomorrow and I'll go to your job. I know the pressure you face because you have to get there at 8 for the first coffee break. And then you work for a half hour for the next coffee break. I know the pressure you face. Cut, 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 cut. You stay home with those kids. And you'll be saying, couldn't we just keep them at an animal shelter maybe for the day? How easy. How easy is it to destroy the hearts of our children by character assassination? You loser. You zero. And it's surging out of anger. And then on lonely, sarcastic words, self-centered focus. Hear now, ye rebels, verse 10, must we? Circle we. What do you mean, we? Must we fetch you water out of this rock? When did Moses ever get water out of a rock? All Moses did was obey God, and God gave the water. But what happened, what anger does to us, gives us a self-centered focus. And the issue is about me. Most of the anger that I have faced has been when it has been me inconvenienced by some decision that someone else has made. I remember one time when our kids were still in school and Tammy was a senior in high school, our daughter Tammy, our second daughter, and she would drive a van load of young people to Faith Christian School. So she would go around the campus, kind of a carpool type thing, and take our van. And then she would go and take them to Faith Christian about 7 miles away. And I got up early one morning. I took my walk over to the dining hall. And I noticed that it had rained and frozen, then snowed, a light layer of snow on top of the frozen rain. And so when I got back, I said, Tammy, extremely slippery out there this morning. Be careful. And she said, I will. I said, just go slow because it looks like there's grip, but there really isn't. And so that day we had, in fact, those days we had about 250 guests on campus for a basketball invitational tournament. And so we moved our chapel up earlier in the day so that we can get the gym set up for the tournament. And so I had my typical morning changed, and I was getting ready to go to preach the earlier chapel. And I had just gotten out of the shower, and our son Stephen came back, and he had a book bag on his back, said, Dad, we're in the ditch. I said, where? He said, just around that first bend. I said, well, let me go, and I'll get the Bronco. He said, Dad, not the Bronco. We are in the ditch. I said, well, I'll go and get the payloader. So I put my snowmobile suit on and my chuck and my Uper wingtips, my sorrels. And so I got them out, and I thought, I'm kind of in a hurry here now because I'm under pressure. And I thought, I'm thinking to myself, I didn't stutter when I said it was icy. Blondes. And so I get the payloader from the shop. I get a logging chain off the hook inside the shop. And I go out there. I go out the service entrance. And I could see the van around that first bend and very skillfully placed among the trees. And I had a Reese hitch on the back, so I hooked that logging chain to that Reese hitch and to the hook on the payloader bucket. And I thought, I'll lift the back end up and I'll kind of snake it out like a wheelbarrow. Well, I lifted it and I started pulling. I realized there was a little popple tree about that size, and I couldn't pull it out without hitting that popple tree. So Reed Nelson, a pastor who was with me, and he was staying with us for that time with the group. And I said, and he had been in our youth group years ago. And I said, Reed, I need you to run back to the house and bring another vehicle and get my chainsaw. Don't get the chainsaw from the shop. Bring my chainsaw from at our house. And I said, I've got to cut this tree down. Well, he brought the saw from the shop. I guess he couldn't find the one. Got one from the shop. I got halfway through that little popple and the saw quit. Now I'm warming up. I thought of all the brain dead stuff I have to mess with today. I didn't stutter when I said, and Pastor Nelson is watching me go through my rehearsal. I said, Reed, who couldn't tell that it's icy out here? Who couldn't tell that? And so I take an axe. I always carried an axe in the back. I always have winter travel. I have shovels in the back, and I have boots in the back, and I have everything. And axe in case some counseling needs had come up. So I took that axe, and I finished that thing and got it over. And I pulled it out. The left front tire was flat. I took the loader and I lifted the front end of the van up to about here, and I was snapping those 8 lugs off, and I dropped it down. I said, Reed, drive this van back. I've got to get this loader. I'm really in time trouble. And I was revved up. Now, why was I upset? I'll tell you why. I had godly things to do that day. Because within 30 minutes, I had to be telling teenagers to live under the control of the Spirit of God in their lives. Yeah, right. That wasn't the issue. It was not going to tell teens to live. It was me responding to a circumstance. But must we now mess with this brain dead operation? And I became the issue. I became the focus. So I got home and I parked the loader. I was sweating. I took my snowmobile outfit off. And I asked Charlene, I said, did you hear me tell Tammy it was icy? She said, yes. I said, did I stutter? She said, settle down. And she asked 2 very convicting questions. Number 1, what are you going to do? Create a problem where there's not one? Number 2, she said, you better thank God the only problem Tammy ever gave us you can pull out with a payloader. And I literally went on my knees by her bed and I said, oh God, I'm so hypocritical and so carnal. And I asked God's forgiveness and I wrote Tammy a love note and I left it on her bed. You say, well, maybe you should have had better devotion. That was not the issue that morning. Did Moses have good devotion? Look in verse 6 of chapter 20. If you've ever had a better God night time than this, talk to me afterwards and explain it to me. Verse 6 of chapter 20. Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. They fell on their faces and the glory of the Lord appeared unto them. What a God night time. So it wasn't that Moses didn't get his God night time in that morning. He got caught carnal. And oftentimes when we get into situations in life, we have to ask the question, are we willing to surrender to what God has given to us? Not make us the issue, but obedience to God the issue. And so, self-centered focus. And you can think of situations, you say, I'll tell you what, I wouldn't be so angry if. No, we have to learn to transfer that over. And then, thirdly, striking physically. Not only sarcasm, not only self-centeredness, but physically striking. He said, "Hear now, ye rebels, must we fetch you water out of this rock?" And Moses lifted up his hand with his rod and he smote the rock twice, and water came out abundantly. And the congregation drank and their beasts. God says, "Speak to the rock." And Moses, in anger, struck the rock. Water came forth. The end does not always justify the means. And I'll tell you what was so hypocritical about me. The very next day, one of our lady faculty members had slid off the road. I was at the coffee pot in the dining hall, and she came in, and she was teared up. I said, "What happened?" She said, "I slid off the road right outside the gate here." And I said, "That could happen to anybody. I was the most kind. I was the most understanding. I mean, hey," I said, "I'll get that thing out for you. Don't worry about it." Now, what was the difference between me talking to her and me talking to Tammy never knew till a year later when she heard me give this illustration. Although I do think when she went in, she was trying to think of where she could live the rest of her senior year. With that faculty member, my reputation was at stake. I didn't want her going back to the faculty lounge saying, "Man, I told Doc, I slipped in a ditch, and did he blow up?" But my character was revealed at home. And how quickly, boy, we can wear this pretense and wear this mask and striking physically. I think you are well aware of the statistics nationally of the abuse of children from anger. Thirdly, what's the calamity of anger? The calamity of anger in this context, it was a diversion from God's plan. God says, "Speak to the rock," and Moses smote the rock. It was a diversion from God's plan. Number two, it was a destruction of the picture God was wanting to paint. Would someone stand up and read 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 4? Someone find 1 Corinthians 10, 4, and would you stand and read that? Yes, right back there. 1 Corinthians 10, 4. I don't want us to miss this, because it was destruction of God's picture. You get it? Okay. Did you hear it? And they did all drink of that same spiritual drink. And that came from the rock. And the rock that followed them was Christ. To be smitten once. And from that point, as our intercessor on the right hand of the Father, he is to be addressed. Not smitten. Once for all. And it was no light thing when God says, "Moses, speak to the rock," because he is the water provider. That rock was Christ. And 1 Corinthians chapter 10 speaks of the murmuring of that group that went through the wilderness. And it speaks of that journey that these people took. And the destruction. You say, what was such a big deal about that? Because what it pictured, that rock was Christ. And thirdly, it was the denial of God's prize. We see in verse 12, "And the Lord spake to Moses and Aaron, because you believed me not." Note this here. "You believed me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel. Therefore ye shall not bring this congregation into the land which I have given them." Moses, you chose to dishonor me in the presence of all these people. You chose not to glorify me. A calamity of anger. How many of you are grandparents? Let me see your hands. Learn to enjoy the grandkids. Be fun to be around as a grandparent. Your grandkids come over and say, "No, no, don't touch that. No, not that. No. What fell over?" And the little granddaughter is saying, "Mommy, can we go home? I think Grandpa's off his medication." And you have the anger that comes. We don't want to be denied. What prizes could be denied? Some people are denied the prize of a right relationship. You're denied the prize of respect. Some may be denied a job. Maybe with such a temper, finally, the job is lost. One dentist asked if he could speak to me after morning service where we were preaching. So I went back in the pastor's office and he says, "You know what?" He said, "My anger drove my son out of the house." And he said, "I was so afraid our reputation, if my son did this and if my son did this, so he did that." And he said, I harped on him so hard that he said, "I can't live with this." And he left. He said, "I have no communication with my son." He said, "Do you think if I took my own life, I could prove to God and my son how sorry I am?" I said, "Oh, that's satanic talk." I said, "You need to get time." He lived down in southern Wisconsin. I said, "You need to take time. Get a day off and just come up and let's spend a day together. Just you and me. Let's drive and talk and pray. Because you've got to get this pride issue settled. And you have to get that matter taken care of in your life." Because he would deny the prize of a right relationship. Do our kids do some things sometime that... absolutely. But there has to be that flow of godly love from the heart. What's the cure as we close? What's the cure to anger? Well, number one, face it. Admit it. Four ways we can respond when the Spirit of God confronts. Repression. We can lie to ourselves. "No, that's not me. No, that's not true. I repress it." Number two is suppression. I lie to others. Somebody comes and says, "Everything okay?" "Yeah, it's fine." So I repress it to me. I suppress it with others. Or do thirdly what Moses did, expression. Where there's the external expression, and James 1 says, "The wrath of man does not work the righteousness of God." God's way is confession, not repression, not suppression, not expression. It is confession. Agree with God, "This is what I am. God, I have been angry with you. God, forgive me. You love me with a perfect love because seemingly your plan doesn't fit me conveniently right now. I am upset with you. God, forgive me." Confess to God, agree with God about what is really going on. And then secondly, focus on God. Face who I am, and then focus on Him. God is in control of all circumstances. The sovereign God who loves us with a perfect love, whom we serve with hearts of love, is in control of all circumstances. If we don't have that assurance, then we don't really have an anchor point at all. Number two, God is conscious of all my needs. Psalm 103, "He knows we are but dust. He understands our frame. He is conscious of all my needs." And thirdly, God is concerned about all my burdens. 1 Peter 5:7, casting all your care upon Him, for He cares for you. I love the illustration that the road team used about the baggage we carry. I thought that was so well pictured. And we finally just drop it all. Drop it all. And that's that casting all your care is like the throwing of a blanket over a horse or a mule. It's a total covering. Casting all of that. Because He cares for us. The cure, face it. Admit, this is what I am. Focus on God, who is the answer. And then thirdly, manifest the fruit of the Spirit. The checklist that Charlene and I use in our lives, the fruit of the Spirit. If we are indeed to glorify God, if we are indeed to give a right picture of what our God is like, then the fruit of the Spirit is that reflection. Love, joy, peace. That's my God relationship. Long-suffering, gentleness, goodness. That is my others relationship. Faithfulness, meekness, temperance. That is my self relationship. And so every relationship I have in life is under the domination of the Spirit of God. And the fruit of the Spirit is to come out in my God relationship of love, joy, and peace. What has killed my joy? What has tested my love? What has destroyed my peace? What about long-suffering, gentleness, goodness? What about the other's relationship? The patience that is demanded? And then faithfulness, meekness, and temperance. And you know, God said, Moses, you can't enter. You can go up on the mount and look in, but you can't enter. But then God, the God of grace, let Moses in. You remember on the Mount of Transfiguration, who was there? Moses and Elijah. Failures are never final as long as the grace of God is operating. I have had to go and ask forgiveness. Had to humble myself. And fortunately, Charlene and I, in our 48 years of marriage, rarely have I expressed any grief and anger towards her. But there have been times when my tongue could have been more careful, but my issues have been more directly, not at church. I wouldn't want somebody to say, boy, Les really blew up at church. No. It's where I've had to go to my children individually and say, please forgive me. And you say, Lord, is it love? Thank you, God, for that person. Because through that person, I'm lacking love. I see that now. Joy and peace missing. Say, Lord, thank you for that circumstance. Because I didn't realize how plastic I was. It's easy to be pretense. I used to go to conferences sometimes, preachers' conferences and educator meetings. And I knew one of the leaders was flapping his tongue. Two-faced hypocrite, I'd shake a hand and say, now I want to see, is there another mouth talking? I used to turn around behind their head because I said, I hear this, but I also hear this. So I'd look around their head. I said, is there another mouth moving back there? Because the hypocrisy of your mouth reveals the condition of your heart. Isn't it a blessing if you can make somebody else look little? You think you make yourself look big and you really don't. And so you say, okay, with others, long-suffering, gentleness. Then what about self? Self-control. Lord, I want that Spirit to control my life. It's an unusual Sunday morning message. But yet I felt as I got back to the room last night and I thought I'm going to try to seek the Lord's mind. I had totally different message planned for this morning to follow the trend of the weekend. And as I lay in bed after I looked through my notes and after I went through what I planned to do, I had the two outlines out on the bed that I had and I laid in bed and in the middle of the night, it was like my mind was still going. And I thought, you know what? I think this is what God would have.
And I haven't often used this on a Sunday morning. I have often used it on a Sunday night in a meeting. But maybe the Lord will take this and use it in your heart and your life.